Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a component that's pretty crucial in automated systems, clip stand stellars.
That's right, valve positioners. They might sound technical, but they're key to keeping things running smoothly in, well, all sorts of industries.
Exactly. And we want to give you the essential knowledge, you know, without you having to wade through dense manuals. We're aiming for clarity here.
We've looked at a technical document, sort of an intro guide, and also a data sheet excerpt for some real-world context.
So our mission today, understand what a valve positioner is, why it's needed, the different flavors they come in, and touch on things like safety, too.
Sounds good. So maybe the best place to start is with the thing it actually controls, the wriggle clip, or control valve itself. What does it do?
Right. The control valve is kind of the last step in a control loop.
Right.
It's the muscle doing the physical work.
The final actuator, yeah.
It takes the command from the controller, the brain, and adjusts something, maybe flow rate, pressure, temperature, to hit a target, a set point.
Mechanically, it's usually a valve stem moving up and down or rotating, driven by some kind of motor or actuator, and sealed with what's called a stuffing box packing.
Seems simple enough on the surface, but our source material points out that getting it to the exact right position isn't always guaranteed. What can go wrong?
Well, quite a few things, actually. The stuffing box, that seal, can get stiff. Maybe it's just wear and tear, maybe dirt gets in there, or maybe it wasn't finished well, or even just over-tightened.
Okay, friction, basically.
Yeah, friction is a big one. Then there's the temperature of whatever's flowing through the valve. If it's really hot, the metal parts can expand.
Ah, thermal expansion. That can make things stick.
Definitely. High pressure pushing against the valve plug can also make it hard for the actuator to move accurately.
So the force of the fluid itself is resisting the movement.
Exactly. And one more, if the product isn't perfectly clean, you know, if it has particles in it, those can literally get jammed in the valve body and stop it moving freely.
Okay, so friction, heat, pressure, blockages. The control valve has a tough job. It needs some help to be precise.
And that's precisely where the clep stand steller, the valve positioner, enters the picture. It's like a dedicated supervisor for the valve.
Making sure it hits its mark.
Exactly. Its main role is to ensure the valve reaches the exact position the control system is asking for. It looks at where the valve is, compares it to where it should be, and adjusts the signal to the actuator to fix any error.
Oh, so it's constantly correcting. That makes sense for overcoming those issues like friction. What else do they do? Are there other benefits?
Oh, yeah. Besides accuracy, they can really speed things up. Many positioners have built-in volume boosters.
Volume boosters? Like giving the actuator an extra shot of air?
Pretty much. It means the valve can move faster, which helps the whole control system respond more quickly to changes. And they also enable a neat trick called split range control.
Split range? What's that about?
Okay, imagine you have one controller, but you want it to operate, say, two different valves based on its output. With split range control, you can tell one positioner, you handle the signal from 0 to 50%, and tell the other, you take 50 to 100%.
Ah, I see. So one controller output can manage two separate actions sequentially or proportionally?
Exactly. The positioners make sure each valve follows only its assigned part of the signal. Our document even shows a specific symbol, you know, for a valve with a positioner attached, highlighting it's an integrated unit.
Clever. Okay, let's get into the types. The document starts with pneumatic positioners, calls them the oldest and simplest, but still common.
Yeah.
How do they work? No electronics here, right?
Right, purely pneumatic. They operate on a really neat principle called the vane nozzle system, or sometimes flapper nozzle.
Vane nozzle.
Yeah. It's basically a way to get a big change in output pressure from a very small mechanical movement. A little vane, like a tiny lever or beam, moves closer to or further from a nozzle where air is escaping.
And that small movement has a big effect.
A huge effect. It acts as an amplifier. A tiny change in the gap massively changes the back pressure in the nozzle system, and that pressure is used as a pilot signal to control the main air supply to the valve actuator.
Okay. The document has a diagram, figure 4, showing this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through it? How does it achieve the positioning?
Sure. So imagine the system is stable in the middle position. The vane is holding a certain gap to the nozzle, creating just enough pilot pressure to keep the actuator still.
Okay, balanced.
Now, let's say the control signal pressure increases. This pushes on the mechanism, causing the vane to move closer to the nozzle, restricting the airflow out.
Right, closing the gap.
This makes the pressure inside the nozzle circuit shoot up. This increased pressure then acts on another small valve, like a plunger or relay.
And that's the amplification part.
That's the amplification. This high pilot pressure shifts the relay, which then directs the main high pressure supply air to the side of the actuator that opens the valve.
And vents the other side, presumably.
Correct. Air goes in one side, out the other, and the valve stem starts moving. But how does it know when to stop?
Ah, the feedback. There must be feedback.
Exactly. There's a mechanical link, usually involving a cam, connected to the valve stem. As the valve stem moves, this cam rotates.
Oh.
The cam's shape is designed so that as it rotates, it pushes the vane mechanism back, widening the nozzle gap again.
Ah, counteracting the initial signal increase.
Precisely. It keeps widening the gap until the force from the feedback cam perfectly balances the force from the increased control signal. At that point, the system finds a new equilibrium, the pilot pressure stabilizes, the relay centers, and the actuator holds the new position.
That's actually really elegant, a self-balancing mechanical system.
It really is. And if the control signal pressure decreases, the whole process happens in reverse. The vane moves away initially, pressure drops, the relay shifts the other way, air goes to the closed side of the actuator, and the cam feedback brings it back to balance.
And the document mentions this works for single-acting actuators too, just by plugging one port.
Yeah.
And you can shape the cam differently.
Yes. The cam profile can be nonlinear. You can shape it to change the valve's characteristic, maybe make it open quickly at first and then slow down, or vice versa, tailoring the response.
Very clever. Okay, that's the pneumatic approach. What about electropneumatic positioners, bringing electricity into the mix?
Exactly. An electropneumatic positioner is essentially that pneumatic positioner we just discussed, but with an extra bit bolted on the front. An electropneumatic converter, usually called an IP converter.
IP, current to pressure.
Current to pressure, precisely. It takes an electrical control signal, typically that standard 4 to 20 milliamp industrial signal, and converts it into a proportional pneumatic pressure signal.
And that pneumatic signal then becomes the input for the vane nozzle mechanism we just talked about.
You got it. The IP converter acts as the translator. Figure 5 in the document shows a schematic of how one common type works.
How does it do that translation from current to pressure?
A typical design uses an electrical coil sitting in a magnetic field from a permanent magnet. The 4 to 20 MAA signal flows through this coil.
Okay.
This creates a magnetic force, like in an electric motor, which tries to move the coil. This coil is attached to a little lever or flapper.
Right.
The force from the coil is balanced against a spring. So as the current changes linearly, the force changes and the lever moves proportionally.
A linear current gives a linear movement. And that 4 to 20 MA signal is pretty standard, isn't it? Robust?
Very standard. It's less susceptible to noise than voltage signals, and the fact that it starts at 4 MA means you can detect a broken wire. 0 MA means a fault, not just zero signal.
Good point. So the lever moves, and how does that change the pressure?
That moving lever directly influences the vane or flapper in relation to the nozzle, just like in the purely pneumatic version. But now it's being moved by the electrical signal via the coil, rather than directly by input air pressure.
Ah, okay. So the electrical signal adjusts the nozzle gap, which creates the pilot pressure.
Exactly. So change the current, the lever moves, the nozzle gap changes, the pilot pressure changes, and the pneumatic relay directs air to move the actuator. The rest of the positioner works the same way, including the cam feedback.
I see. So it's like putting an electrical front end onto the pneumatic mechanics. The document shows a picture, too. Figure 6 of what one looks like.
Yeah, a typical industrial unit. And it gives specs, too. Input 420 MAA, output maybe 2100 kPa, which is about 0.2 to 1 bar, and needs an air supply of maybe 1.4 bar.
So the IP converter's output is the input signal for the pneumatic part. Makes sense. Now, the really modern ones, digital valve positioners, they came about in the 90s.
Early 90s, yeah. These are a different beast altogether. Here, the control signal itself is sent digitally.
Digitally, like over a network.
Usually, yes.
Yeah.
Using protocols called field buses, think of them as dedicated industrial networks. This allows for way more information to be exchanged.
More than just the position command.
Oh, much more. And crucially, it's often bidirectional communication.
Bidirectional. The positioner can talk back to the control system.
Exactly. That's a huge advantage. It can send back not just the command signal, but the actual measured valve position, diagnostic information, alerts, maybe even temperature or vibration data.
Wow. Okay. So you get much better insight into what the valve is actually doing in its health.
Precisely. It enables things like remote configuration, much more advanced diagnostics, even predicting failures before they happen. The schematic in Figure 7 looks quite different.
Yeah, it does look more complex. What are the key bits here? I see microprocessors.
Right. At the heart are microprocessors doing the calculations and control logic. They receive the digital command via the field bus.
Okay.
Then, instead of a vane nozzle, they typically control tiny internal IP converters, or PISO valves.
IP converters again?
Sometimes, yes. Very small, precise ones. Or PISO valves. These then operate miniature pneumatic on-off valves, often called 22 valves.
Two ports, two positions, on or off.
Exactly. By rapidly pulsing these little on-off valves for the supply air and the exhaust air, the microprocessor can very precisely control the pressure going to the actuator, allowing for fine positioning.
So it's using digital control to pulse the air on and off really fast to get intermediate positions.
Essentially, yes. It's a form of digital pneumatic control. And there's also usually a high accuracy sensor measuring the valve stem position directly. Often an inductive sensor, as mentioned.
What does that do?
That sensor converts the physical valve position into an electrical signal that feeds back directly to the microprocessor.
Ah, so it's a closed loop right inside the digital positioner. It constantly checks, did I reach the position I was told to?
Exactly. It compares the digital set point from the field bus with the actual position from the sensor and adjusts those little pulse pneumatic valves accordingly. And importantly, the document points out, no vane nozzle principle here. It's a fundamentally different way of operating.
Got it. Digital control, digital communication, direct feedback. Very different. Okay, one more component mentioned is the list reducer or air reducer. Sounds important for the air supply.
Absolutely essential. Usually it's a combined filter regulator unit. It sits on the compressed air line feeding the positioner and the valve actuator.
And it does two things, filtering and reducing pressure.
Correct. First, it regulates the incoming plant air pressure down to the specific stable pressure needed by the positioner and actuator. Plant air pressure can fluctuate, but these devices need consistency.
Right. And the filtering.
That removes dirt, dust, water droplets, oil carryover, anything in the compressed air that could cause problems.
Why is clean air so vital?
Well, think about those tiny nozzles and passages inside the positioners, especially the pneumatic and electro-pneumatic ones. They can get blocked really easily. Even tiny bits of grit can cause them to stick or malfunction.
Okay, so clean, correctly pressured air is critical for reliability. Makes sense.
Definitely. It protects the investment and ensures consistent performance.
All right, let's shift to the paperwork side of things, CE marking and certifications. Why do these matter for positioners?
Well, CE marking is the manufacturer basically declaring that their product meets the essential safety and environmental rules for sale within the European Economic Area, and it's recognized widely beyond that, too.
What kind of rules apply to positioners?
Key ones mentioned are the EMC Directive Electromagnetic Compatibility. That means it shouldn't emit too much electrical noise that could interfere with other devices, and it shouldn't be susceptible to interference from other devices.
Okay, plays nice electrically.
And also the low voltage directive, which covers general electrical safety aspects for devices operating within certain voltage ranges.
What if it's going into a hazardous area, like a chemical plant with flammable gases?
Then the ATEX directive comes into play. That's specifically for equipment used in potentially explosive atmospheres. The positioner has to be designed and certified to prevent ignition.
And getting these marks isn't just ticking a box, right?
No, usually it involves testing by an independent third-party lab, a notified body, especially for things like ATEX. Once it passes, the manufacturer issues a declaration of conformity.
And the document lists other specific certificates that might come with it, like ATEX certs and Sennel ratings?
Yes. The Declaration of Conformity lists the standards it meets. An ATEX certificate will specify how it's safe. Maybe it's intrinsically safe, low energy, can't cause a spark, or explosion proof, contains any internal explosion.
An ASI, safety integrity level.
Right. ASI relates to functional safety. It quantifies the reliability of a device when it's used as part of a safety system designed to prevent accidents. A higher SIL number means higher reliability for that safety function. Crucial if the valve is, say, shutting off a dangerous flow in an emergency.
So these certificates give the user confidence it's safe and performs as expected, especially in critical applications.
Exactly. They're documented proof of compliance and capability.
Lastly, the document shows an example data sheet, Figure 8. If you're looking at a data sheet for a whole control valve assembly, where do you find the positioner details?
Typically, yeah, you'll find the positioner listed under the accessories section of the main control valve datasheet.
Accessories, okay.
It'll list the model, manufacturer, maybe the input signal type, 420MA, field bus, etc. The certifications like ATECs, and sometimes options like gauges or feedback sensors.
So you need to check that accessory section to make sure the positioner matches your control system and the environment it's going into.
Absolutely. Check the input signal compatibility, the environmental ratings, temperature, IP rating for dust water protection, and those crucial certifications.
Right. Well, that feels like a pretty thorough tour of the world of CLEP standstillers.
We covered quite a bit, yeah.
So just to wrap up, what are the main takeaways for you, if someone remembers just a few things?
I'd say, one, positioners are essential for making control valves accurate and responsive, overcoming friction and other problems. Two, there are different types, the classic pneumatic, the electro-pneumatic bridge, and the modern digital with its two-way communication.
Okay.
Three, things like air quality are really important for keeping them working reliably. And four, always check for the right certifications like CE, ATECs, and CELL, especially depending on the application.
That sums it up nicely. Hopefully this depth dive is giving you, our listener, a much clearer picture of these vital components. They really are unsung heroes in automated control.
They are indeed. It's amazing how much precision comes from these devices.
And it makes you wonder, with digital positioners already offering so much data back to the system,
mm-hmm.
What's next? How might, you know, future advances in these digital positioners, maybe with AI or more integrated sensors, further change how we control and monitor industrial plants? Could we see even more autonomy?
That's a great question. The potential for more data, smarter diagnostics, maybe even self-tuning valves. It certainly opens up interesting possibilities for the future of process control. Something to think about.